Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., coming at you from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And just for those of you that might be new to the show, Podnuts Pro is a podcast where we share products and share stories and tips to help techs run their IT support business in supporting their IT clients. We have a very different format today. I have a guest, Jay McBain, who is the principal analyst at Forrester Research, Inc., and we are going to talk numbers today, so I hope that I can keep up. But without further ado, Jay, how are you doing today?
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I'm coming to you live from 20 miles north of you in Boynton Beach. And I know it's actually 20 miles because I got on my bicycle on Sunday and rode to Fort Lauderdale and back, and my legs are still killing, so we're very close.
You actually rode your bike.
Yeah, so we're both in the epicenter of COVID down here in Palm Beach County.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. So I actually drove by you today because I actually had to drive up to Fort Pierce.
Oh, there you go.
Got back just about an hour ago. So
just wave as you go by on the turnpike.
That is true. So when you ride your bike, where do you come down A1A, US-1? What do you do?
I've created, I like to leave from my home so I don't trailer it somewhere. My bicycle. I also ride a motorcycle, so I'm always down at Fort Lauderdale Airport with the motorcycle before COVID. But on the bicycle, I've done a route. So it's actually 40 miles from my house to do a circle around Mar-a-Lago.
Okay.
I went the other way and did a circle around the Boca Town Center, which is the big mall around here.
Yep.
And that was about 40 miles. This time I just went straight south 20 miles, and that was into Fort Lauderdale and then back up 20. I think next weekend I'll just go north by 20. So I'm just kind of covering a window around my house.
Okay. All right. And Sunday, I'm trying to remember, it rained for a part of Sunday, so you must have gotten in the window where it didn't.
No, I got some rain.
You got some rain?
Whenever you go 40 miles and it's like 2.5 hours, you're going to get, especially in Florida in this time of summer, you're going to get pockets.
Yes.
So that one I happened to hit, I think, Boca. I ran through the rain in Boca.
Okay. Yeah, because the wife was trying to mow on Sunday and she had to work around the rain. So that was fun. All right. So let's get into it. So we're not going to really talk much about Forrester. I think for the listeners, if you have been in the industry for any bit of time and you've seen reports and articles talking about numbers and stuff, you know that Forrester is probably the company behind it, even though there is Gartner. I think Forrester is pretty much completely focused on, well, I shouldn't say completely, but a huge part of it. There is a huge focus on CIOs and the IT industry. Am I correct in that?
You are. And I've got, 1,000 colleagues that wake up every day and think about security, or they think about compliance or all the different parts of the 26-layer tech stack. I wake up every morning and have for 26 years thought about the channel. So how do MSPs and VARs and resellers and ISVs and system integrators, how does it all fit? How are people coping, given COVID and everything else? And bringing in a lot of the higher level research about what's happening in the technology market and with buyers, and relate it back to, your business and what your clients are talking about. And, hopefully we can raise all boats by, getting better at what we do every day.
Okay. So the reason that you and I are speaking is I was talking with a guest earlier, I think it was last month, and we were talking about, coming out of COVID and what that might look like for the channel. And of course, I have my vision in terms of how my business is doing. And for me, not much has changed. I know that for a lot of the groups that I listen to, a lot of the techs that I talk to, a lot of them are scared. because they, you know, some of them have ties to certain industries that are being heavily hit. So they're wondering where their clients may come from in the future. But we were talking and he said that, you know, 30% of the IT industry could be different in a year. And that number kind of shocked me. And I said, I need to find somebody who really knows the numbers and introduce Jay.
Yeah, so absolutely. And, you know, we track this very closely. There's about 50,000 MSPs in the world, about 30,000 of them in North America. We look at their financials, the P&L. We look at their balance sheets and things like that. There's other great companies, and you may have spoken to, you know, Service Leadership, Paul Dippel in the past, or Gary Pica from True Methods. And they do this for a living and you know, print out 800-page reports on this. But we know that in the best of times, 25% of MSPs struggle to break even. And this was in fourth quarter when unemployment was at all-time lows, the stock market was at all-time highs. And in that environment of pretty, you know, great economic times for 11 years, to have one quarter of our peers and friends out there in the network struggling, you know, this COVID, you know, adds an element to that, that based on cash flow and based on stimulus and PPP and based on what vendors and distributors and kind of, I'm trying to put together the entire picture here of what this looks like and what a 17% drop in revenue for the average MSP actually means for survival. And again, you mentioned industries. If you're in retail and hospitality, you may be down by 90%. If you're in tech and government and healthcare, you might be up by 10% right now as you go into the second stage of COVID. If you're in Florida like we are, you might be down. If you're in Des Moines, Iowa, you might be up. If you're in Scotland, if you're in Germany, I mean, it's different. It's a tale of two cities based on the industries you serve, based on the location you are. And it's just a really interesting piece of calculus to work out.
Mm. So interesting. So I made a note here that you said even in the best of times, there's 25% that have this issue. Now, is that just normal where we have startups that don't make it, or we have, you know, companies that just, you know, phase out in terms of, you know, owners retire, businesses close? I mean, that seems like a high number.
Yeah, there's probably a dozen variables there. You've got 40% of MSPs that their owner principal is in their late 50s or early 60s. So in the next 4 or 5 years, you're going to have a little bit of an age demographic changeover in the market. So they might be, you know, changing things in their business to set up for the next handoff, whatever that's going to be. You definitely have consolidation. I'm sure you've talked a lot about M&A and different things happening with roll-ups and private equity and things like that's happening, which, by the way, coincidentally, is driving some price compression. Mm. And there's a lot of talk about what the average, and every market is different. Again, every customer is different. But if the average is $113 per month per device or per person, whichever way you charge, what's inside that $113? How much do you have to spend in SG&A and tools to make that work? And in the end, what's your gross and net margins that come back out of there? And a lot of MSPs are finding that the average business that they're running is only at 17% margin, which is, you know, break even in many cases when you have to pay the mortgage and a payroll. And the average MSP has 8 people, you know, 7 technicians that are out there. And all those things considered, it's not the market it may have been, you know, a few years ago. Definitely not the market it was 10 years ago.
Okay. So that helps understand because I get it. And there are a lot of reasons that people come and go and our margins are thin. So that has a huge impact on it. So looking into, so you mentioned Service Leadership earlier, and that was one of the articles that I read before I started diving into yours. And, you know, it talked about the different possible scenarios in terms of, you know, what the impact of COVID will be. And, you know, there was 3 scenarios, I think, but I only wanted to focus on the 2 because they seem to be the probabilities. The 1% was 30% probability. The second, 60% probability, which was obviously the biggest impact. But first, before we get into the direct numbers, all of these talk about an unrecoverable financial distress. Now, you know, we talked a little bit about on a normal basis, companies, you know, going away either because they're aged out or M&A or whatever. But in terms of this, this sounds like distress is going to be because of lost revenue or something like that. Do the numbers dig into that, or are they just kind of reflecting across the board?
No, we definitely do dig in. And okay. The reason I call it distress, which is a fancy word for either bankruptcy or a forced M&A. You know, if we were going in M&A in December, you know, your valuations were X. If you are in a struggling situation right now and you need a lifeline, your valuations are Y. And so you might be put in a position, you know, to get picked up by private equity or another MSP that's rolling up, but it's definitely not going to be a retirement plan. You may look to have to do a workout and, you know, obviously continue to pay your mortgage. So Right. Whatever the scenarios are, forced retirement. So if you go back to 2008, 25% of the channel, you know, took a haircut in terms of, you know, people getting forced to get out of, you know, their entrepreneurial positions and maybe partner up or get forced into a situation where it wasn't really what they wanted to do. And that's the distress element here.
Okay.
And again, doing the average is tough. Like we said, it's a tale of two cities. How do you compare somebody who's growing, who's consolidating, who's, you know, really making things happen, you know, to somebody who's, you know, one payroll away from, you know, not being able to make it. So, you know, you do these averages, but you always have to dig in and tell the story, you know, in a different way, by industry, by geography, by sector, segment, and size of the market, by the different parts of the technology stack that people do. You know, trying to compare one MSP to the next is difficult because we've lived our entire lives trying to differentiate ourselves Right. From the next person. So you can't lump people together. So you have to, you know, break into these averages to get the real story.
All right. So you know what? You just answered that enough. I don't think we need to dig into it too much. But you did mention that we had a similar parallel incident in 2008. Now, I think the difference there is that the early 2000s was a tech boom. And I think that there was a lot of growth that was just kind of, you know, I don't want to say more than organic. I mean, a lot of it was, in a sense, fabricated. There was just so much money going around that when 2008 hit, I think it was just a correction, in a sense. This is, in my mind, a little different. We didn't have this huge boom. Everything was just kind of going along. This is an actual outside event hitting us. So are the numbers different in the two parallels, or are they really the same?
Well, the numbers come back to the financial strength of the community. You know, whether it's a pandemic, whether it's pandemonium, whether it's a tech bubble that we went through in 2001, whether it's a housing crisis that led to a global recession and depression in 2008, these are all outside forces that come into our industry. But again, how you weather the storm, what makes it different here is 2008 was prolonged. It took a lot of government assistance to bail out industry and automakers, banks, investment houses, and things to get, you know, stabilization back. This time is different in that it touches the economy in a different way. Every small business seems like has their own story, but certain industries have had to be bailed out, and individuals now are getting bailed out with a first stimulus check, now a second stimulus check, PPP. The difference between 2008, though, is you now have vendors and distributors picking up some of these credit and capital acceleration strategies, given the pain that they suffered in 2008 with a quarter of their channel partners going away. So you saw companies like Cisco and Dell make some multi-billion dollar commitments to the channel. You've seen the distributors like Ingram and Synnex and Tech Data all come in with four or five programs to accelerate payments. And so everyone's learned a lot from 2008, and that makes us a little bit hopeful. But now that we're going into this second spike of COVID, you know, what we predicted, that 60% probability of things recovering mid next year, is about an 80 or 90% probability now. The 30% probability that we would have a fourth quarter recovery and it would somehow be V-shaped, you know, we're now down into like a 10% chance and probably a single digit chance of that happening now. So this is one of these issues where now this third thing that we're not going to talk about, which is on, you know, what happens if it doesn't happen mid next year? What if the recovery, you know, goes onwards into 2022? And, you know, those 25% of partners go away, the next 25%, now are in financial distress, and the next 25% are within, you know, a month or a quarter of financial distress. Now we're talking about a scenario that was on the worst case of, you know, CDC and the WHO. We're in their worst case scenario right now, and those percentages are now coming into double digits. So we got to start weighing, you know, what a mid-2021 recovery, more of a U-shaped recovery, means for our own business, what our industry. And we got to start thinking about, what if it's not then? And what if there's another 6 months or another year, given that, you know, with this second spike, we don't know the future.
Right. So I know that of course, there was the initial outcome and trends coming in 2020, but the first report I saw, I think that you did, was in May, and then there was an update to that in July.
Yep.
How often do you think that there will be a need to look at, you know, how things are looking in terms of the shift? Because every time a stimulus comes out, every time there's a PPP story, you know, now that we've, you know, some of that PPP money is coming back to the government because the wrong people got it, stuff like that. How much of an effect does that have on some of these numbers?
Yeah, it's a huge effect. And, you know, when our business used to change, you know, kind of monthly, daily, weekly, I mean, now it's by the hour. You know, we wake up every morning and, you know, get our damage report of what's happened in the last 24 hours. But, you know, yesterday, for example, the Senate is starting to warm up to a second stimulus. And so, you know that we're in a political zone here in the U.S. with a November election, that the president, the Senate, the House are going to want to get money in people's hands before November. But again, for the average MSP, you know, if it's $1,200, you know, that kind of gets you through maybe a day. It doesn't pay your rent. It doesn't pay the bills. It definitely doesn't, you know, help you with payroll. To a consumer, that might help you with a rent payment or two, or get some groceries on the table. So these are consumer level stimulus. We got to focus on the business side and figure out, as an industry, obviously with government and other elements, what that's going to do to prop up this 25% that, again, can't at this point make the next payroll. The next 25% that are now in, you know, month or a quarter away from, you know, financial distress. So, you know, this is what we're looking at. And if we are going to spend the next year in this environment, we need to understand, to the decimal point, what this means in our own business and what this means for our industry.
All right. So you mentioned a couple of things that the vendors have actually stepped up to help a lot, and that, and now I'm kind of whipping up a question in my head here, because part of me is thinking that they too took a big hit because of all of their growth, I believe, is stimulated by the events that they get to do, and the fact that they get to go out and meet IT companies and things of that nature. That's off the table now. All of that had to be scrapped. Now they're adjusting with digital events, but a lot of that is down as well. So in terms of, you know, spending is down, but it's being redirected and stuff. So I don't even know what the question, I'm trying to figure out if that's a benefit to them because they don't have to spend the money, you know, in other areas, and now they can focus it on these new areas that are really going to help MSPs and IT providers and other parts of the industry.
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's something that I spend a lot of time thinking about. Today is Microsoft Inspire Day, so I'm doing like 6 different keynotes at all times during the day and night. They decided to bring it local to every geography, so at 1 in the morning, I'm on with India, and at 3 in the morning, I'm on with China. So you know, here's the new virtual world we live in, right, to serve people in their time zones. But if I take a step back on the vendor side, there's a lot of moving parts for them. And the IT solution provider, the VAR, the reseller, the MSP, the system integrator, the ISV, kind of the broader ecosystem, which is basically everybody now becoming a technology services company. 81% of accountants are doing tech services. 78% of marketing agencies are now doing tech services. So they're looking at this Venn diagram that I build of millions of companies that are now trying to influence the buyer. What's interesting is in the cloud, when you look at the SaaS layers, the business application layers, kind of the future projects happening in the cloud, 65% of them are happening outside of IT. So the vendors are finding that it may not be the VAR or MSP that are fronting that conversation. In many companies, the head of marketing is spending more money on technology now than the head of IT. So they might be paired up with a marketing agency or digital agency, a consultant, a system integrator, and a couple of ISVs around that conversation when the MSP might come in later when that Marketo, Eloqua, HubSpot needs to be integrated into the environment and secured and governed and managed and monitored. But the front end of the conversation may not include the partners that they've relied on for the last 30 plus years.
Well, that should be interesting because for a long time, the IT provider, MSPs, were the ones pushing that conversation, actually being able to resell. But if now that's being bypassed, there's some of that revenue that's now being redirected. So interesting.
Yes. So here's an interesting stat. So I mentioned today's Microsoft Day. They have 355,000 VARs and MSPs, part of their core network they've had for over 30 years. They're bringing on 7,500 new partners every month. And I've been up to Redmond a bunch of times, and 80% of those partners are non-transacting partners. They're not reselling Microsoft licenses. They're not in that transaction part of the equation. They're either influencing Microsoft technology earlier in that customer journey and more likely to be a non-technology buyer, or because every company in every industry, number one, is becoming a tech company. Number two is becoming a subscription business. The actual transaction itself is becoming less important to them. It's actually the renewals, the retention rate, it's the adoption, it's the cross-sell and upsell, it's the integrations driving stickiness, all the things that MSPs know because they run a recurring business. All these vendors are starting to wise up to what a recurring business is and the important thing of staying with that customer forever and making them sticky every 30 days forever. And now they're learning that there's a new channel over there of consultants, of integrators, of people like agencies and accountants and others that are with that customer forever that drive those renewals that they also have to have in their ecosystem. So I call it this trifurcation. There's this influence partners, there's these transactional partners, there's these retention style partners, and 80% of the future of a vendor now is thinking about other people sitting around this virtual table, around this influence of the customer. Different world.
Yes, it is. And the idea of subscription-based services is getting to the point where the customers, I sat with a customer yesterday, they approved a network refresh.
Yep.
But half of that meeting was us determining who they're going to pay their subscription service to, whether it was going to be me, whether it was going to be Microsoft, whether it was going to be another company. And that's all part of the conversation because they're getting information from everywhere now.
So there's this drive of marketplaces now, another element of vendors. You see big vendors like Microsoft, you see them Salesforce, Oracle, SAP, IBM, Google, AWS, everyone I list off is now thinking about this marketplace mode. Where does it make sense for the customer? Because the average customer of a business application like Microsoft Dynamics or Salesforce or ServiceNow, Workday, Marketo, Eloqua, whatever it is, the average customer is going to buy seven other things. Does it make sense to procure and provision and monitor and measure and manage all of that in one place, which is a marketplace? Or does it make sense for the MSP to go make relationships with all seven of those companies, get part of their partner program, and get it all onto single bill that way? And we're predicting that 17% of all technology is going to be bought in the first way going forward by 2023. This is huge because there's over $2 trillion today that's put through the channel. And if you took 17% of that and shifted that into a marketplace, the revenue dynamics of your business, the P&L, everything changes if you rely on front and back end margin from the vendor or distributor.
Right.
Now to a Salesforce, for example, who shut down their resale program. So they're recruiting 250,000 new partners and none of them are going to be reselling licenses. It's all going to go through the AppExchange, but there's a ton of ways to make money. For every dollar of Salesforce, there's $4.65 of services that wrap around it and software. So in those professional services, it needs to be installed, implemented, integrated, secured, compliant, continuity, the data. I mean, I could list off 17 professional services. Today, that drives $4.65 for every dollar of Salesforce, and it comes at 75% margin, which is 3 to 4 times the margins that the average MSP makes. So what's fueling this new economy of non-transacting partners is this element of high margin, high demand cloud services wrapped around the infrastructure, which in many cases they don't understand. The bits and the bytes and the hybrid cloud and the multi-cloud environments, those aren't the places that they're playing. They're playing upstream, which happens to be much more profitable.
Right. Now, this is going to be out of left field too. How often do you get asked those weird questions about what does this mean for, you know, the MSP, the VAR and stuff? Because it sounds like those numbers would scare most of that part of the industry in terms of losing, you know, those margins. Because it's weird, because, I mean, you're not the consultant. You're just showing the numbers.
Right.
But because you show the numbers, it's like, okay, well, where do I go to get my money now? I mean, are those types of questions that you have to answer?
Yeah. So, you know, I would say to an MSP who doesn't have any time like I do to rip through $2.26 trillion of spend, but you want to know where the hotspots are. You want to know coming into August in COVID that companies are spending money in automation. They're spending money in cloud acceleration. They're spending money in security and risk and compliance and continuity. They're spending money around customer experience and employee experience and e-commerce and market. You want to know where the areas that you can address your customer, because nobody's signing up to big managed services deals right now. No one's signing up to big transformational projects with Accenture. I mean, it's a very laser-focused market. You want to know where the dollars are. But more importantly for a MSP is you want to know where the margins are and who are these people that are serving your clients. When I said that everybody's becoming a tech services company, I'm not joking. Every lawyer, every tech, you know, every architect, everyone's coming in to get a piece of this pie. The good news is the pie is growing. There's a huge infrastructure element where MSPs are going to continue to do well. Post-COVID, they're going to grow by close to double digits, probably for the next 10, if not 20 years. So there is no end of MSP messaging here. It is a good market, but there are adjacent opportunities happening inside your clients today with different buyers. The head of marketing might be spending more than the head of IT, and they might be doing a Marketo project, and they're spending $5 for every dollar on software with other service providers. So you may or may not have those skills. You may not have that practice. You may not have that, but there's a bunch of security and there's a bunch of other elements to that, data and other elements that you can lend into that project. So understanding, and when people get out of their houses again after COVID, when you look at the guest book at your client, there's an 80% chance that everybody signing in is having a technology conversation of some type or another. So look it through those names, if they allow you to, without getting arrested. But look through those names, and if you don't recognize those names, you might want to go back and figure out maybe some of these other elements of people who can be helping you as part of this broader tech ecosystem happening in your market with your customers and your prospects. So getting inside those conversations, I think, is an element of what you have to think about in the next couple of years.
Absolutely. Trying to keep a seat at the table and have your customer keep you as, you know, an advisor, influencer may work out in the end.
And so, having those other four people in the other seats talking nicely about you as well and giving you that, you know, out of that $4.65, giving you your well-earned dollar, you know, in that project. So you're picking up, you know, business. And these are the things you're certified to do. These are the, you know, I don't want an accountant in doing security. I don't want my digital agency in doing compliance work. I don't want these people who are, this is their first time at the plate, you know, swinging at the ball. You know, I want somebody who's already done it, who's locked down my environment. I want somebody who's managing and monitoring. That's the person I want at the table. I want the other four people around that table working with that person right from the early stages of my project.
All right. So having said all that, how do things look now in terms of, you know, predictions for the rest of 2020 and going into 2021? It sounded like things were kind of looking a little bit better. How much better?
Well, again, tale of two cities. Depending on the industries that you serve, you know, this would be the time to look at governments, healthcare, technology, industries that are growing through COVID. If you're in retail and hospitality and some of those, you want to look adjacent to those opportunities because you're probably not going to find a lot of gold in 2020. Secondly, geography-wise, you know, if you are in a hot zone, which you and I are in, it's going to be a little bit of a challenge. But you've got skills, you've got, you know, kind of product packaging of what you do that's unique and differentiated to go in and maybe serve nationally or regionally in some of the regions that are growing. You know, that might be a second idea. This idea that going to different sectors and segment or size of customers, going into different buyers, like we just talked about, going into different parts of the technology stack. Computers are down by 17%. Telco is down by 16%. Tech consulting and SI work is down by 15%. So maybe avoid those double digit dips and go into what I talked about, automation. If you haven't thought about RPA, robotic process automation, the biggest company, UiPath, grew by 5,614% last year. This is the future of automation and AI.
Last year, as in 2019?
The year, this previous year before COVID.
Okay.
They're the fastest growing technology company ever. It was Microsoft, then got replaced by Salesforce, got replaced by Slack, and now the fastest growing company ever to 100 million is somebody nobody's ever heard of, UiPath in RPA. As an MSP, if you haven't read up on RPA, this weekend would be a perfect time. Because the number one thing customers are talking about right now is automation, getting past this human failure and the workflows and the processes and the business logic that has human gates in it to get humans more parallel to that and have your business run through a pandemic. You can do that through SaaS. You can do that through business process outsourcing, business process automation, or RPA, which is basically software bots. There's nothing robotic about it, but it's an element of your business. It's no code, low code. You don't have to hire DevOps people that know how to program, but you know your company, your customer, you know the business they're in. You've built a lot of their workflows technology-wise. You can help them automate. This is an extension of your business. This is a bright spot during COVID. All companies are talking about it. It's the number one thing coming out of phase two. And every MSP has the skills to go have that conversation.
Well, I have a note here about automation because you're right. Everybody's talking about it. Not only are we talking about it, how do we automate things more so that we can make things happen, but we know our customers are because we have to take out the human element and how can we automate stuff there and how can the IT industry be a part of that. So interesting that RPA is obviously something we need to be looking at. Wow. We could, I don't want to get down rabbit holes, so there's a lot to dig into here.
We'll do that in part two.
Yeah, we're going to have to do a part two. I do appreciate you coming on and taking a little bit of time to talk about this with us. Is there one lasting comment that you want to leave everyone with before we head off here?
Yeah, the one great thing that the MSP does and the industry as a whole, and it has a great brand in front of customers. You know, the MSP industry and the VARs and resellers are the ones that rolled up their sleeves and got everybody home and productive in world record time. Customers are absolutely going over the moon in terms of how great the channel reacted to COVID. That was the triage phase. Most companies grew by 70% during those first few weeks. That being said, to be as relative and relevant in phase two, everything wraps around your customer. Getting obsessed over their personalized situation, given all those things we talked about, geography, industry, everything else, but getting obsessed over where those spots could be. It could be the head of finance. It could be the head of operations or marketing or sales. The automation isn't going to come maybe out of the IT person. It may not come out of the CEO. So make sure that you're having empathetic, non-tone-deaf conversations across all your channels, your sales team, your marketing team, your website, your social media, don't be off on Facebook ranting about masks. Don't have your chatbot, you know, be tone deaf. Don't have your help desk yelling at people, but go at it with a coordinated effort to have a broader conversation about cloud acceleration, about automation, about security, with all the different elements of your customer, and you're going to make it through. This is going to be a bright spot. You're going to grow your way through the second phase of COVID.
Good words. And I do want to reiterate that. Most of my clients were so happy with how quickly we were able to transform their business. Some of them were already set up to go remote, so it was easy. Some of them had resisted, but COVID forced them to do it. And the fact that we were able to transition them very quickly, I think, is part of the reason that I'm doing okay. You know, so I'm not worried, although I am going to now take note to make sure I get to the table on all these other discussions that they may be having and haven't told me about. So thank you very much for letting me know that. So, ladies and gentlemen, Jay McBain, Principal Analyst at Forrester Research, Inc. I will put the link to the page in the show note, put a link to some of his blog posts that I think are going to be very relevant to the IT industry. If you haven't gone there, go there and look. Jay, thank you very much, and we will definitely be back for a part two.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this episode of PodNuts Pro. I'm your host, Marvin B., and I'll be back with another great episode really, really soon. But until then, holla.